This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You got Matt Miller on all the time.
Matt Miller.
Here I come. You ready?
Lead NFL and NFL draft analyst at Bleacher Report.
The NFL, you need guys who have upside and potential, and yet that's something that kind of makes you special.
The Stick to Football Podcast.
We ain't got to talk about too much. We're just having fun and we're working, baby. That's it.
Going through college and NFL film.
You need to be just an MF-er out there where you're going to put this guy on the ground every play.
Matt Miller with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Matt Miller's on Twitter at NFL Draft Scout, Bleacher Report, the Stick to Football Podcast. He's on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Down to Mobile, Alabama we go. This is a man in his cups. This is one of his favorite places and favorite times of the year. What are the headlines right now, Matt?
Yeah, guys, good morning. I think the headlines right now, you know, are the quarterbacks. We come down here and you have Justin Herbert, you have Jordan Love, and everyone wants to see, what do these guys look like? You know, how are they performing in person? And for me, this is my first look at both of them in person. You know, I didn't make it out to Oregon. I didn't make it out to Utah State over the last 2 years. So having that opportunity to look at them and say, okay, like, this is what you look like, you know, spinning the ball. This is what you look like on the move. So you get that, as Thomas Dimitroff told us the other day, you can sniff the pits a little bit on these guys. But still, like, what they're doing here with those two players in particular doesn't answer some of the question marks that I have about them as players that you see on game film. So it's a good opportunity to see guys in person, but especially with those two, where we're trying to figure out who the third quarterback in this draft will be. Like, you can get excited because you're seeing the guy and you're down here, but it's still not answering a lot of the big questions we have.
Reading around and talking to some people about those quarterbacks, I can't shake. And if this is harsh, I apologize, but this is what it sounds like. It sounds like people think Justin Herbert's soft. Is that fair?
That's fair, and that's not harsh. That's what people have been saying about him for 2 years, maybe three. You know, since he became the starter there, it was like, yeah, that's the knock on this kid. And I've had some intense conversations with Mario Cristobal about it, and we disagree on Justin Herbert a little bit. But I think that is a knock. You're right, that he's seen as kind of quiet, aloof a little bit. And that might seem like a really weird thing to put knock a player for, like, okay, the guy's quiet, but you know, you want leadership, and it doesn't have to be, you know, this rah, rah guy, but you want someone who can command a room, that when he stands up to speak, it's going to demand respect, and people are going to listen, because you play quarterback doesn't mean you're a leader. You're expected to be one, though. So you want someone who can do that. And I think with Herbert, he knows that is a knock. You know, his agents are intelligent people. They're going to know that that's a concern, because folks like myself have been saying it publicly for quite some time. So I think he's made a really good effort this week to show better leadership. He's never going to be Baker Mayfield. That's just not who he is. But if you can be, you know, Josh Allen, who is a quiet guy, but is still a leader, if Justin Herbert can show that he's that guy, he might end up being a top 10 pick, just like Josh Allen was.
Reports are that Jordan Love had a much better day two than day one, and he needed it.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Dan, you cut out there.
You're talking about Jordan Love and his second day being one that he needed after struggling out of the gate.
You know, and I know I saw those reports as well. I disagree. I thought Jordan Love had a really good first day, because I think you have to manage your expectations. You know, like, what do you expect from a guy who's never thrown to these receivers? It was really windy the first day as well. So I think Jordan, you're going to be impressed by his traits, right? He has a really good arm. He can move around and make throws off schedule, on the move. And unfortunately, he is in a practice that is being run by the Detroit Lions, where it seems like all they want to do is stretch and not put guys in positions to really impress us with one-on-ones. That's what you want. You're then evaluating. You know, the Cincinnati Bengals are practices are fun. They're upbeat. Guys are competing in one-on-one situations. And the Lions are doing it's a lot more slower. It's a lot more methodical. And so that can make it a little bit tough. With Justin Herbert, we're watching him throw, you know, 50-yard bombs, receivers competing with DBs. with Jordan Love, you know, we're watching a lot more of, like, you know, 5-on-5 and 7-on-7 where they're wanting him to check down or throw a screen game. So it is unfortunate they're not on the same roster, so we're not getting an apples-to-apples comparison of what they're doing. And I think with Jordan Love, and I've heard this from a lot of people this week, everyone's a little bit frustrated by the type of practices the Lions are running because it's hard to get an eval when you're watching a guy do a half-speed install of the offense.
Has anybody told you why they're running those practices?
No, I mean, that's just, this happens. You know, last year, the 49ers, like, it just seemed like Kyle Shanahan didn't really want to be here. And so the practices, you know, weren't, you know, super upbeat. And I don't think there's, like, a correlation to if you're a good NFL coach, how you run your Senior Bowl practice necessarily. But it is, you know, it is tough because you want those guys, and Matt Patricia's been doing this a long time. He knows you want to be able to get good looks at guys doing position specific drills to where you can evaluate that. And I think that is, you know, even like today, practices are being moved indoors because of rain. So for a lot of people, it's like, all right, the week is over for a lot of people evaluating. And unfortunately, on the north side, there weren't a lot of reps where you really got that.
You know, that is a bigger issue, I think, than you make it seem. Because at the NBA Combine every year, that is a top-down operation where the NBA itself is hiring and instructing all of the coaching to standardize it to make sure the goal is to showcase exactly what scouts need to see and want to see. They essentially ask the scouts, how do we set this up to make sure all these guys running college stuff can run representative pro stuff? What you're saying is an argument to take this out of the hands of teams, to have this siloed as a league operation, just because otherwise you're defeating the purpose and you're allowing teams to game it for their best interest rather than the best interest of the players involved.
It's tough because the Senior Bowl is not owned and operated by the NFL, right? They work in partnership with the NFL. So, you know, the NFL selects the two teams with the worst record who don't have a new head coach. So that's why it's the Bengals and the Lions. But, I mean, you're right, Dan. It is frustrating. And the Lions have a general manager. They have scouts. You know, they know that what you want is a clean look at this. And I think it puts, you know, Jim Nagy, the executive director, puts him in a tough spot because, you know, he doesn't want to, you know, publicly say, yeah, the Lions aren't running the best practices for us to evaluate players. They might win the game Saturday. And of course they're getting, you know, all the time with these players behind closed doors. So it's not affecting their ability to evaluate, but it does make it a little bit harder. And I've talked to some teams about it and they say, well, you know, the Senior Bowl is kind of a small part of the puzzle anyway. And they're able to get the film from the practices and go home and cut it up and evaluate it. But, you know, and I'm not just complaining because I work in media and it makes my job harder. I think it does the players a little bit of a disservice when they're not being, you know, put in the same situation. So it would be great if there was a standardization of, you know, we want 20 minutes of wide receiver versus DB one-on-ones. Yep. We want 20 minutes of O-line, D-line one-on-ones or, you know, two-on-ones. So that would be amazing. That would be awesome. But I think the Senior Bowl, they want to sell tickets. They want to, you know, build interest. They have to make money. And so they want that. We have the Lions. We have the Bengals. You know, last year they had the Niners and Raiders. Like you want that. You know, we have NFL coaches coming down here to run these teams. And you can look at what the Raiders and Niners both got key players in their draft classes from being down here running these practices. But you're right. It's one of those things, like with the NFL draft, there are a lot of little things that we would like to change. It's just, it's always been done this way, so it's hard to get that traction.
He is Matt Miller of Bleacher Report. You follow him on Twitter at NFL Draft Scout. Matt, it's our first time chatting since we've had a matchup for the Super Bowl. What are your first couple of thoughts on the Chiefs and Niners?
Yeah, this is it's difficult for me, guys. As you know, we've been talking a long time. I grew up a huge Niners fan, but living in Missouri, my six-year-old son's a huge Chiefs fan. So we're not talking, he and I. We're beefing a little bit the next 2 weeks. But I look at this, man. It's hard for me to imagine the 49ers being able to score enough to beat the Kansas City Chiefs. And I'm just like being honest, unbiased as an analyst here. It's tough for me to picture that. And the Chiefs have gotten better at stopping the run, you know, which is the Niners' bread and butter. These two teams haven't played a lot, but they know each other. You know, there's a lot of commonalities in what they want to do. And, you know, they both have, you know, excellent pass rushers. So I think it's going to be a great game. It's a really good matchup. The NFL has to be really, really happy about that. But when it comes down to it, for me, it's the difference that Patrick Mahomes brings to the table. You know, what he can do, we've seen it in the playoffs, what he's been able to do as a runner, what he's able to do. You know, they get down against the Texans. They get down against the Titans. And when you have him running your offense, you really feel like you're never out of a game. And that's proven to be true in the playoffs. It just seems like he's He's getting better each week. He's getting more comfortable each week. And you look at, you know, the Niners, like Richard Sherman, great player. He's not running with Tyreek Hill, you know, and you know where Sherm's going to be, you know, because as people like Darrelle Revis have pointed out, he doesn't travel. He's going to be on one side of the field. And so I think with Kansas City, you can get some pretty favorable matchups by putting your speed receiver over there and forcing, you know, safety help over the top. So I think the Chiefs are in a good spot to win this game. I do think it'll be close, but I know I will have to pick it. And right now I'm pretty set on picking Kansas City to win.
In theory, how many points would the Chiefs have to be down at halftime for you to write them out?
30.
Yeah, I mean, no, really, I get it.
A lot. They were down 24 to Houston. And it is, you know, a little different because San Francisco is built to do that, you know, to pin their ears back and let Nick Bosa go get you, and D Ford will get his snaps in, you know, if you get a lead. So I think that, you know, the Niners are really built well to do that, to get a lead and then, you know, make you throw the ball. But so is Kansas City, you know. So I think with that, with Mahomes, it's just so different because they have so much speed and he has such good vision and such a good arm that they can just score so fast. And even now with Mecole Hardman as a return man, they're able to get chunk plays on special teams. So they are crazy, man, how explosive that offense is.
Yeah, that's sort of how I phrase it. I don't pick games. I don't pride myself in any ability to gamble or predict. But when it comes to something like this, I'm not going to be the guy that bet against Patrick Mahomes at this time in this game. Not on the trajectory he's going, where he is apparently becoming something here. And it would be so dumb to bet against him, to say, hey, you know, well, I never saw that. Oh my God, Patrick Mahomes was this good? You know, there are rare times in professional sports when you see somebody doing the things he's doing, and I'm going to be on the side that he's going to keep doing it.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, I've been doing this a decade, and I can remember saying the same thing. Like, I'm not going to be the guy that picks against or bets against Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, you know? And so now it's like, you feel that with Mahomes. Like, I'm not going to be that guy because, you know, we've seen what he's done, you know, since coming back from the knee injury has just been absolutely amazing. And it's, you know, it's great because, you know, I imagine, and I'm probably going to upset some people, but I imagine this is what it was like for y'all when Jordan started to hit his stride of like, how much do you have to be down, you know, to think that Jordan can't come back and win this game? And it's just, it's really special. It's cool to see it at the beginning, you know, and to be able to appreciate the rise a little bit and watch a player go from really talented to now damn near unstoppable.
Why is there any question at all in some camps as to whether or not Eli Manning is a Hall of Famer? Because to me, the numbers speak for themselves, the accomplishments speak for themselves, the comps speak for themselves. This is an easy one for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at what – it's almost will versus should. Should he be a Hall of Famer might be a little bit more of a conversation, but he will be. I mean, he will get in.
See, should is not for me. When you start looking – should, yeah. I mean, I think this is not even close.
You think he should be?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. I mean, because of the – I don't know. Let me back that up. I don't know if I'm okay with that. I think that we give Eli too much credit for the two Super Bowls because that's – I even said it. Well, he won two Super Bowls. The Giants won two Super Bowls. And so, you know, he was more like the guy, you know, driving the car. And I am a little biased because when he started to fall off, it was pretty bad, you know, and he was kind of still out there. And I know when you look at the yards, you know, at 57,000 yards – over 350 touchdowns. Those are a lot of the watermarks, but I think that he is going to be more of a Jerome Bettis who, yeah, he's going to get in because he's popular and he's got a good name instead of Eli Manning was never one of the three or four best quarterbacks in the NFL from 2004 to 2019. I don't think he was ever one of the three, four, five best quarterbacks in the league. So it's tough with that because is that what the Hall of Fame is or is it, you know, what it is honestly is where it's like, these were players who, either through longevity or moments, you know, became stories. And with Eli, those two Super Bowls, especially beating the undefeated Patriots, that might have been good enough right there. He might have been able to retire after that game and have been a Hall of Famer.
Matt, appreciate you as always. Great talking to you. Enjoy the rest of the Senior Bowl, man.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys. Talk to you soon.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.